Well, I always tell people now, like, you know, you continue to man up, eventually it's going to be man down if you don't get the help that you need. So I realized in 2017 when tears started coming out, just flowing because for no reason, that I'm hurting and I don't know why.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Jaren Keith Gaynor.
And I'm your co-host, Marielle Turner. And this week we are asking, Dear Culture, is social media's dragging culture even more dangerous these days? Please be advised that we will be discussing sensitive topics such as mental health and suicide during this episode. Please protect your peace as needed.
So, Marielle, before we get into today's show, what's on your mind this week?
Well, Jaren, I know you're not the biggest sports fan, but as a longtime NBA fan, I have to mention that, you know, the NBA is back, the playoffs have started, and Portland Blazers star Dame is proving to be a living example of letting your haters motivate you. LA Clippers stars Paul George and Patrick Beverley made fun of Dame on Instagram, saying he was going to miss the playoffs and be sent home after missing two late shots against the Clippers. And basically ever since then, he's been going insane on the court during games. He's averaging a bubble high 37.6 points per game, which, you know, is pretty impressive. And, you know, after advancing to a play-in game on August 15th, the Blazers defeated the Memphis Grizzlies and advanced to the playoffs to square off against LeBron and the top-seeded LA Lakers, who they ended up beating in game one. So let's take a listen to Dame in his own words on the social media bullying he encountered.
Going back to the beginning, like, I missed two free throws at the end of the game, which is not something that I typically would do. Some failure is going to happen. You know what I mean? I'm not above failing or coming up short. And it happened in that moment. You know, teams going to be hype about it. Teams going to talk trash. But it turned into a taunt, you know, to me when they started tapping the wrist and waving way after the fact. And then I was asked about it. So when I was asked about it, I was like, shots being fired in my direction. I'm going to fire back facts.
So, Mario, you're right. I'm not the biggest fan of sports. But I'm glad to hear that Dame was able to rise above the haters. But as I often say in jest, everybody ain't able. You know, lately, I've been thinking a lot about online bullying, and even though Dame's situation is more on the light end, but there's also the extreme. Some people aren't able to block out the noise, and as human beings, we all have our breaking point. Somebody that's been on my heart and on my mind as of late is Tamar Braxton. As you know, she attempted suicide over her strained relationship with WeTV. Tamar is a huge reality star, and she's often the victim of public scrutiny. And a lot of the things that were at the center of Tamar's issue with WeTV was how she was represented. She felt like the image that WeTV was putting out of her was not representative of who she thinks she is and who she sees herself as. And Tamar has often been praised and ridiculed for her big personality. And she's often on the receiving end of people's criticisms. And I think that even though it seemed like this suicide attempt was related to WeTV and a disagreement in business, at the center of it, I can't help but think about how the opinions of others played a role in Tamar kind of reaching her breaking point. And it just makes you have more compassion for celebrities like Tamar Braxton, because we often consume their art and we watch them on TV and we think that we have a right to say what we think about them. And we don't think about the repercussions about how that impacts them on an emotional level, on a spiritual level. And unfortunately, in the Tamar situation, it was the more extreme end where it could potentially lead someone to want to take their own life. And it just really resonates with me because Tamar is a celebrity, yes. She's a reality star, yes. But she's also a human being. And I think anybody who exposes themselves to the world, there needs to be a little bit more grace for them and a little bit more compassion for them as human beings.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see your point there, and I agree that we so often see them from a distance that we don't really realize that they have their own lives, their own baggage, their own emotions going on that impacts their day-to-day. And specifically with Tamar Braxton and WeTV, you know, WeTV has been accused in the past of having racist business practices, specifically by music and hip-hop mogul Damon Dash. So I think we should take a quick listen to what he had to say about it.
To me, WeTV is racist TV, and we don't need to be supporting no racists when they laughing at us. I couldn't just sit there and work with them no more. I couldn't take it no more. It's like they create a problem personally within my family so that they could go and capture and split us up and then do nothing to make it better, only make it worse. So I just need y'all to let WeTV know that y'all know what's up. And that as a culture, we all gonna stick together, man. And these faces that aren't from our culture, they should tread lightly if they're gonna work with us. They should work with us and respect us.
You know, Mario, it's not surprising that a network like WeTV, which is ran by predominantly white people, would be accused of having a racist, toxic work environment. And it just harkens back to what I was saying about Tamar in terms of fans ridiculing her, or not even fans, really just people with opinions. But there's also this racial element. And so imagine having to deal with what people are saying about you online, and then also allegedly going to a racist, toxic work environment. I think if I was Tamar Braxton, you know, I would reach my wit's end as well. And it just drives, again, the importance of holding space and compassion for everyone, no matter your social status in the world.
Jiren, before we get into our discussion about the dark side of social media, I want to pause here because our fabulous entertainment director, Courtney Wills, sat down with Emmy Award-winning journalist and television personality Mike Hill to have a conversation about his new memoir, Open Mic. He offers some helpful strategies on dealing with social media pitfalls and enlightens us on how writing this book saved his life. Take it away, Court.
I'm so excited about this book. I'm so excited that you wrote it and that you are really opening up, I think, about things that we don't see men talking about enough, particularly in our community. So what prompted you to take this on?
Well, I actually had to, because I felt like if I didn't write this book, then I would die. I really felt that way. The long story is, you know, 2014, somebody told me I should write the book because they heard about my past, about some of the things, the issues that I've gone through, my ups and downs in my career and in my personal life or whatever. They said it's an interesting book. And I felt like, nah, nobody's going to read that because I'm not a celebrity, so I'm not a big deal or whatever. Even though I was on ESPN, I was like, it's not going to be a big deal. Nobody's going to read it. But I put it down after writing like about 4 pages. Man, my job is great. I'm outwardly, I'm dating people, I'm enjoying life. Everything's great. But I just found myself crying on the inside all the time, and tears would just come out for no reason whatsoever. And I'm like, what's that all about? Now, I had been depressed before, but at the same time, this wasn't like that. Because like I said, the facade, the outward appearance was great. But I realized that I was hurting. And something told me, I think it was God told me, you need to write this book. You got to write. You got to let some stuff go. So once I started writing, it felt like I was regurgitating. It felt like all of this energy, this negative energy, all this sadness, this pain, all these traumas just started coming out of my body and started flowing. So it became something that I couldn't stop doing. So once I started writing again in 2017, I could not put the computer down. Every opportunity I got away from work, I didn't really go out. I didn't hang out with people. I just had to write this book because I needed to write this book at that time. So it was beneficial because I really, really believe that it saved my life.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about, like, what was your entry point into maybe for the first time you recognized that you had depression, and like, what was your road to getting treatment?
Well, the first time I realized I had depression was when I lost my job in Dallas. Okay. And I realized that there was, you know, I was without a job and fired, whatnot, and just sleeping all day, gaining weight. I just wasn't the same. I was lethargic. You know, when you start thinking about, you know, having suicidal thoughts, you're depressed. You're going through something. But once again, as a Black man, we ain't going to go get help. We're not going to go talk to somebody about it, because you're taught to just kind of man up about that type of stuff. But later on, like I said, in 2017, I just knew I was happy. I would tell anybody, I'm happy. I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life. I'm the happiest personally. I'm the happiest professionally. I don't have any worries. But once again, it was inside, and I didn't even realize it was there, because we as Black men sometimes, you know, a lot of times, we suppress our pains and our traumas and the things that we go through because we are taught not to show those type of emotions or let anybody know that you're hurting, because you got to be a man. You got to man up. Well, I always tell people now, like, you know, you continue to man up, eventually it's going to be man down if you don't get the help that you need. So I realized in 2017 when tears started coming out, just flowing because for no reason, that I'm hurting and I don't know why. But like I said, writing the book basically helped me to alleviate some of those pains, and the therapy afterwards was the maintenance that I continue to get to this day.
Fantastic. I know that, you know, turning 50 for a lot of people makes them like quite reflective about where they've been and where they're going. How do you feel going in to 50, you know, with this new book, with a marriage on the horizon? Is this, you know, your second act?
I feel amazing. I swear to God, really on everything. And I really can say this wholeheartedly and genuinely from the outside, on the inside and everything. I feel the best I've ever felt in my life. I feel mentally sharp. I feel physically able to do anything I want to do at this age right now. Emotionally, I feel great and I feel whole and I feel I'm ready to take on the world. So this has been a rebirth. So once 50 started, it was a reset for me. 50 was my rebirth. It was my reset because what I did, I decided that once I turned that age, writing this book, that's the reason why I wanted to put the book out the same day, is because I can forgive myself for all the misfortunes and the misgivings that I committed in the past. I've forgiven. I put that all behind me. I'm leaving it behind. I've asked the people that I've hurt in the past to forgive me. They say they have or whatnot. Now this is my new birth. So the next 25, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever God has in store for me to walk the face of this earth, I'm going to live my best life and I'm going to be happy and I'm not going to accept negativity and I'm not going to accept anything that doesn't bring me joy or happiness. And I plan on being a great, positive person that when you come around me, you can feel my light and you can feel my joy and my happiness. And that's what I just want to exude and bring to other people.
Yeah. I wonder how does social media like affect your mental health? And have you found yourself, you know, on the receiving end of a lot of criticism and drama on social media? And if so, how do you handle that?
Don't read it. You try not to. The block button is your friend. I'm going to tell you right now. Like I said, I'm not accepting negativity. There are certain things that, especially being on the Housewives now, you know, being part of that kind of like the cast, whatnot, and being with Cynthia. Being a sportscaster for so many years, you got fans and they are fanatics. They're crazy and they say all kind of crazy things and threaten you and your mom and all that type of stuff. If LeBron James loses a game, you say something negative about him, or Kobe back in the day when he's like, all that. That's one side. Housewives fans, reality show fans, they're totally different. There's a different animal. They come at you personally. They look at they will zoom in on pictures and see if you need a manicure or not. You know, I've been called every name in the book. I'm an opportunist, you know, like they question my sexuality. They do all that type of stuff. And then, of course, when the preview of the book started coming out and they heard about my infidelities and all of a sudden wants to cheat off. So if you allow that stuff to consume you and to get into your head, it will. And it will have an effect on you. And I got to admit, when it, you know, first started happening, I was certain things that would kind of piss me off or certain things that would make me, you know, just talk about it a little bit too much. But over a period of time, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you know what? Don't read it. Because a lot of the things that people are saying, people that it's coming from, nothing against them. I know they got a life or whatever, but they don't really have an effect on you. They're not giving you a check. They're not somebody that you're emotionally invested in or whatever. So they have a right to their opinion. So if that's their opinion, let them have their opinion. It's not affecting you that much if you don't read it. So I just don't buy into it. So there are certain sites or certain blogs that I know they ain't for me. So if I see my picture up on a blog that they reposted from Cynthia's page, I'm not reading the comments because I already know what the majority of the comments are, just like 30% of the comments are. And what we do on social media is we always focus on the negative and not the positive. We can have 1,000 comments on our social media page. 990 of them can be so positive and great, but those 10 that pop up that tell you about yourself that they don't like you for whatever reason, we focus on that and we give that too much energy. And I've decided that I'm not giving that any kind of energy whatsoever. I'm just going to hit the block button and keep moving.
Yeah, that's right. I can't even imagine. Talk to me a little bit about open mic sessions and what we can expect from that new YouTube series.
Open mic sessions is a derivative of the open mic book. Obviously, some of the things that I went through while I talked about in the book, it's being a black man and not having role models and of course my relationship. So we started doing some of the subcategories of the book. And the first one was the Black men pandemic. You know, it's talking about the racism that, you know, Black men have had to go through in this country, you know, and it's something that's, you know, obviously systemic and how it affects us as Black men. So I'll get panels of some of my friends, celebrities, whatnot, just good, you know, thinkers and whatnot, bring them together so we can just have an open, raw, honest, unfiltered discussion, just giving us the real and putting it out there and letting other people know that, you know what, I go through this, he goes through this, but you're not alone. And so we did that for the first one. Then the second one we did called What Women Need. And that got a great reaction because it's about relationships. And we're not just basically saying, hey, you need to do this as women, because we're men, can't tell you that. But we want to tell you what you need to hear, not necessarily what you want to hear. And then on the flip side of that, we want to feel, you know, we want to figure out as Black men, what do our Black women need from us to make them feel more like queens, whatever. So that was highly successful. So I think I'm gonna continue to branch off and do more relationship shows by bringing in some of my, you know, celebrity male friends with a female voice to kind of keep those sessions going, because, you know, sometimes you gotta have a female voice in the room to keep the men under control and also ask the questions that are necessary to spark our minds to, you know, give them a little bit more advice. So been highly successful. We're going to continue to do that throughout the months to come.
Lastly, Keita told me that your stepfather was a hitman when you were
What? Yeah.
In the book,
yeah. If you read the book, you'll see that my he was my stepfather. He raised me. I actually have his last name. I was born James Michael Maxwell, and he changed my name to Hill when I was 15 years old. But he raised me. You know, he married my mom when I was a kid, and my biological father wasn't around, so he was the only father I had, you know, and he had flaws. He had faults, you know, alcoholic, drugs, whatnot, and all that type of stuff. Very abusive to my mom. You read about all that type of stuff in the book or whatever, but, you know, not to excuse that, because there is never excuse for that. But, you know, he loved me, and you could tell he had a good heart. He was just a person that, when I look back on it, all the mistakes I made in my past is because of something that I didn't have, and that's called a mentor or somebody to help raise me the proper way. Looking back on his life, this man was bipolar, but he was never diagnosed because we don't go get the mental help or the treatment that we need to figure it out so that we can live a better life and be able to control that type of stuff. But, you know, we as Black men just don't do that. And back in the past, he didn't do that. So, yeah, you'll read about it in the book. How he told me what he did in the past and how it cost him in the end, all that type of stuff. Very intricate, very interesting stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Mike.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thanks for that riveting conversation, Courtney. Staying in that same vein, let's get into this week's discussion about social media dragging culture.
It's not just Tamar Braxton. You know, over the past few weeks, there have been a rash of cryptic tweets and Instagram posts from celebrities who have raised concerns over their health, including fears of attempted suicide. There seems to be a thread in each of the stories that we're going to dive into, because they all stem from public pressure on social media over their statements, opinions, or beliefs. And while we often assume celebrities can take the heat, these cases are examples of the harm in online bullying culture. Not to mention, we're all still grappling with this coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, that part, I think that's also having a very big impact on people's mental health and having an outlet for them to express what they're going through. And I think a lot of times that can, you know, come out on social media, because that is what we use to, like you've mentioned, express our thoughts, express our opinions, and get those feelings out there. And you know, one of the major stories that actually has been occurring over the past few years, not just in this time of coronavirus, is the story of Azealia Banks. And you know, she's made a lot of very outspoken statements online about her mental health and about the way people treat her and the way people approach her. And it's almost to the point that some people are saying, you know, this is kind of like the boy who cried wolf, where it's this ongoing pattern, and are you really affected in questioning whether these instances on social media are really impacting her, or is she like quote unquote trying to get clout and expand her brand by speaking about these things. And you know, there was a recent tweet from her that I think if we should really try to think about taking just a little bit more seriously. And what she said was that she thinks that, well, just to read verbatim, she said, "Yeah, I think I'm done here. This pandemic, extreme lack of social interaction, no intimacy, combined with constant public ridicule, is making life harder than it's worth." And I think that's such a powerful statement to say. And I think that's also, in some ways, could be seen as a cry for help for somebody to step in, and she has a safe place to speak about her feelings. And, you know, in addition to that tweet, she also mentioned, because a lot of trolls attack her and saying, "You just want attention, you just want to be famous, trying to get on the A-list." She mentioned, "You know, I'm not begging for attention or asking for sympathy or empathy. I'm just ready to go peacefully, of course. My soul is tired." And then she repeated that she was ready to go. And we did want to mention, you know, that we have reached out to her about these comments, because of course we don't want to assume anything. We have not received a response from her about her tweets or where she's at mentally right now.
Yeah, and we really want to stress that we hope that Azealia Banks is well. Those messages were very disturbing. And I think that when you see that, the first thing you think is, oh my gosh, can, you know, you want to get to her. You know, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't say I'm like a huge fan of Azealia Banks, but she is talented and she is certainly worthy of care and protection just like anybody else. You know, somebody who also caused some concern was Nick Cannon, of all people. You know, we've seen Nick Cannon on TV, he's hosting all these shows, and we just don't think of a Nick Cannon as someone who might be having struggles, but he recently at the center of controversy over anti-Semitic comments, and he did apologize. But then when he apologized, some people in the Black community were kind of mad that he apologized, and so he felt like he was stuck in the middle. He had one part of the country saying he was anti-Semitic, and he had another part of the country, his own community, saying that he was essentially arguing that he was a sellout. And he went on Instagram, he said, "I'm out." And he's since opened up a little bit about his comments and said that he had thought about taking his own life or that he was having suicidal thoughts. And it's just very disturbing when you think about it. We have Tamar Braxton, we have Nick Cannon openly talking about wanting or thinking about taking their own lives. And it's just very, very, very disturbing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, think about how we feel as, you know, regular people on our day-to-day, not famous, don't have a lot of fans and people sharing their opinions. And imagine if we had millions of people who were constantly bombarding us with their thoughts, their opinions, and a lot of it being negative and criticizing what we think, what we feel, how we look. And I think we already can have so much insecurity just without being famous, without having that element into it. And I could only imagine if you were famous and every little thing that you did or said was constantly critiqued or nitpicked, how that might affect your mental health. And you know, it does trickle down. We've seen it in schools, we've seen it in universities where people will get bullied online for, you know, like, "Oh, I saw you at this party and I posted it on my Instagram story, and now everybody's making all these comments about you, about how you were acting at the party." And you know, I think in a lot of ways, it can be very overwhelming for people to try to navigate such a complicated space.
Yeah, I can speak for myself because, you know, we work in the media, we interview celebrities, sometimes we're on camera. And when you work in journalism in this capacity, it exposes you to public comments as well. And I know I've gotten it, I'm not sure about you, but I remember even back in college when I was writing for the school newspaper, there was something that I wrote that kind of went viral and some people were not happy about it. And they took my picture and put it on blogs. And I was 19 years old, you know, green into journalism. And when I Google my name, I see these disparaging comments about me. And so that was really my first kind of experience in the dangers of the internet and being exposed to people's opinions and people having the license or feeling they have the license to say and do whatever they want. And the reality is that that's just not how the real world works. You know, we expect so much of people and we feel like we can say whatever we want, but there are consequences. There are consequences for the things that we do and say. And sometimes those consequences have long-lasting impacts on people's spirits. And I know for me, I don't want to cause another person suffering. And so I hope that people will start to kind of rethink the way they engage people on the internet, because it's really getting out of hand.
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's just reached kind of the point of excess. And it's, like I mentioned, it can just be a little bit too much. And speaking, you know, as you mentioned, of being journalists and working in the media, I think this does happen, especially early in your career. I know for me, I was actually covering the Women's March, and this was right after Trump was elected. And I saw, you know, all these amazing signs and posters. So I just posted them on my Twitter, what's happening at the march, and, you know, a lot of disparaging things were said about Trump in that time. And so I remember when I posted a few of those things that were being said to me from a lot of the protesters, I had a slew of MAGA people like go into my mentions and say all kinds of terrible things about, you know, me as a journalist and how Trump is this amazing person and this amazing man. And we've all seen over the past 4 years kind of how that culture around Trump can be. And that's just, you know, one example I can think of how people will so quickly catch on to something, as you mentioned, not fully understanding what's happening and immediately going to attacking that person that may have a different opinion or is just sharing maybe sometimes another person's story, not even their own personal story or something they've experienced.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Trump because, you know, Michelle Obama on her podcast, she mentioned how she had low-grade depression and people were very concerned that the former first lady was suffering from some level of depression. And I really believe that a lot of that was stemmed to the state of this country. And I saw that as a code for Donald Trump, because the reality is that Trump is, I see him as the political manifestation of everything that is wrong with social media dragon culture. I mean, when you think about it, you know, a lot of the name calling, the mean-spiritedness is coming from the top. The most powerful man has the power to go on Twitter and say anything that he wants about whomever he wants, however he wants, and he's not checked for it. And so if he can do it unchecked, just imagine how his supporters or followers feel, or anyone on the internet. They say, well, if he's not being reprimanded for it and it's socially accepted from Trump, then I can do it too. And I just think that overall, it's just very dangerous.
Yeah, and it's very much pushing this culture, not just of sharing your opinions, but sharing of things that are not even facts, that especially with Trump are often lies. You know, some of the comments that he's made, obviously about, first it was Obama and the birtherism theories and all of that around Obama. And now we see him doing the exact same thing, the same racist theories about Kamala Harris. And it's so true what you mentioned in that he can literally say whatever, even if it is not based in fact. And there's nobody there to put a stop to it. There's no checks and balances on what he has to say. And when you see that from the most powerful man in the country, it kind of gives, I think, people the empowerment to do the same thing and to share those same lies and things that can be harmful to people and that can really destroy not only their reputation, but their emotional and mental health as well.
And here are some perfect examples of how Trump has been the ultimate troll over the years.
3 weeks ago when I started, I thought he was probably born in this country. And now I really have a much bigger doubt than I did before. But he doesn't have a birth certificate, or he hasn't shown it. He has what's called a certificate of live birth. That is something that's easy to get. When you want a birth certificate, it's very hard to get. Doesn't have a serial number, doesn't have a signature. There's not even a signature.
And then those illegals get out and vote, because they vote anyway. Don't kid yourself. Those numbers in California and numerous other states, they're rigged. You got people voting that shouldn't be voting. They vote many times, not just twice, not just three times. They vote, it's like a circle.
To spread a deranged conspiracy theory, tying the death of pedophile Jeffrey Epstein in prison to the president's former political rivals, the Clintons.
You know, Marielle, whenever I hear, just listening to that really just infuriates me. Because One, I'm reminded that this is our president representing the United States of America, but also just hearing all those conspiracy theories, racist conspiracy theories in terms of the birtherism, it's not just simply being a bully when it comes to Trump, it's spreading lies and causing millions of Americans to believe those lies. It shows you that bullying culture is not just about making someone feel bad. It can also be just overall damaging to our society. And I think that we as Americans are witnessing a very interesting tipping point in our country in which we have to decide, who do we want to be? Do we want to be evil and mean-spirited and spread lies about people like Donald Trump? Or do we want someone in office who's going to treat people with love and compassion and just know how to speak to people? And I can't believe I'm saying this, but to tell the truth.
It's truly sickening to hear some of the things that he says and that he claims that he knows and he has proof of, when it's very, very clear that they are conspiracy theories that are not based in fact, that are heavily based in racism and ignorance, and that he can just say this so freely on such a huge, it's a global platform. I mean, he is the president of the United States, which to this day, I have no idea how that happened. But here we are, and we've given this man, this crazed man, this huge platform to say whatever he has to say. And I think you are so correct when you say that the impact is so much bigger than just, you know, how it might make you feel, but it also affects policy. It affects the way people live their lives. It affects the things they can accomplish. I agree with you. It's just so infuriating. And I just hope and pray that come November, you know, I hope and pray that we will see a change, that this era of online bullying and lies and Trump and MAGA is just completely done. We can move forward and start fresh, because I know I'm exhausted. I'm sure there's lots of other people that are exhausted by this. And yeah, I'm ready. I'm beyond ready.
Yeah, me too, girl. I'm ready for November 3rd. I'll just leave it at that. We want to remind our listeners to please support local Black businesses and donate to your local organizations and religious institutions. The business that we will highlight this week is Shadabi. These hair supplements created by Elizabeth Davis are created to inspire lush, healthy, and strong natural tresses. The Griot has published a list of 50-plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's GRIO.com.
As always, thank you guys so much for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. And make sure to share it with everyone you know.
Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcast@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Talusma.